Welcome to By the Sword, where we discuss the modern study of historical European martial arts, or HEMA, with instructors, experts, and martial artists from all over the world. I'm your host, Fran Laquarta, and in today's episode, I talk to Graham Mayer of Moose Historical Fencing in Maine, USA. Graham is also the founder of Philadelphia Common Fencers Guild, and we discuss starting a HEMA club, keeping HEMA inclusive, and making HEMA artworks. The episode was recorded on Instagram Live, 6 February 2022.
Hi.
Hi, Graham. So, my guest tonight, Graham Mayer from Moose Historical Fencing in Maine, USA. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Glad to be here.
He's a bit shy. So, first of all, I mentioned Moose Historical Fencing. They were the first ones online when they're so excited to see you. I know they've been gassing you up big time on social media. So,
good. No pressure.
Yeah, you're with those folks in Maine. Lovely people. Prior to that, you were in Philadelphia. Is that correct?
Prior to that, I was in Resurgam Fencing in Portland, which primarily focused on Italian fencing. And then before that, I started the group Philadelphia Common Fencers Guild.
Philadelphia Common Fencers Guild was a group that you started up. It's now run by Connor, who was our last live stream guest. A last live stream guest would have been ours, but unfortunately he had scheduling issues. So Connor is now running the show over in Philly. So tell us how you got into swords in the first place. How did it happen?
It's really funny, actually. I think 2012, I was browsing for swords, probably like wall hangers or something. I think I was looking for katanas or something like that. And I saw on the Hanwei website, I saw a picture of our mutual friend Dave Rawlings, and he looked very serious and fit, and he had the Rawlings line of like those whippy swords that and I was like, wait, that man is bald, he looks fit, and he's holding a European sword, and that looks totally legit. And I don't see any mention of like, you know, lightning bolts or magic missiles or anything like that. So I kind of did this rabbit hole and learned about HEMA. And this was like way back when people were still thwacking each other with like Shinai and like plastic swords and lacrosse gloves and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how I got my start, was just literally like going online, looking for swords, and then just kind of gawping at like this whole scene that I'd never heard of, and just going, oh, I found my people. So
now you like similar to me, like when you're growing up as a young punk kid, you were into the scene and you know, the community and everything. I don't know about you, but for me, it was a very familiar kind of, wow,
yeah,
community of people out there. It was a very similar vibe. Did you feel when you got into HEMA, the sort of the DIY aspect of it?
Yeah, especially with the first time I like practiced and like the event I went to, it was like such a, like, it was like some of the people's kit was like the Jode family car, were just kind of slapped together and just kind of like, and everyone was, and it was this sort of decentralized kind of like people, like if you didn't know, someone's like, oh, let me show you how. And like, you know, not this, I mean, there was competition, but it was much more like, oh, cool, the new person. And, you know, generally it was very welcoming. And then just like at punk shows, you know, there's friendly bumping around and smacking of each other. So, you know.
I've not often said, like, when I first went to fight camp, I was like, it's like going to a festival, but there's no just fighting instead. It's a similar kind of vibe, you know, the kind of friendliness and the, like, people being together and, like, forming, you know, connections and communities. It's that kind of feel. And I think that's what kind of makes people feel really welcomed and like there's a lot to discover in He-Man, not just the sources and the fighting, but also the people and like the community itself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you tumbled down the rabbit hole. I guess what in 2012, I don't know whether there was much on YouTube then, was it? Was there a lot to learn?
It was all. So Dave Rawlings uploaded his Sword and Buckler video, and I really didn't even know anything about that. And then I think primarily a lot of the stuff there was that awful Reclaiming the Blade film that I think was done by Arma. And I think Fabrice Cognon was on it, and so there was a lot of that stuff. And then there was like seemingly all the stuff was like Polish tournament videos where they were just beating the piss out of each other, and like this was like way like they're throwing elbows and kicking and stuff, and it wasn't Boher, it was like it was Hema, but it was they were very intense. And at the time I was like, I want to do that. But there wasn't a lot of instructional stuff. No, it was all like, and that was like made it extra hard. Cause I was just like, where do I get into this? You know? So, and I think that's a lot. Oh, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I remember when I started out, there's loads of stuff on YouTube now. Like most people, when I say to them, now, how do you get into Hema? They go, oh, YouTube, Matt Easton, or, you know, YouTube. I saw this,
right.
This thing. And, but when, back in my day, there wasn't an awful lot on YouTube, except for maybe like sparring videos with the AHF guys.
Yeah.
And, it was still lots of stuff on DVD, because I remember Dave Rawlings brought out a Sword and Buck DVD around that time called Obsessio, mm-hmm. And I got super excited, because it's like, wow, an instructional DVD! So, like,
right.
DVDs and stuff. So yeah, there was it was still into the, you know, the discs and stuff back then, but yeah, things have changed. Things move really fast in Hema, don't they? Like you said, the Rawlings line is now Red Dragon, you know, the synthetic swords that everybody uses when they start out. And we don't have Shinai anymore, and we don't have lacrosse gloves. We still got shitty gloves, but they're not as shit.
They're officially shitty gloves now, as opposed to secondhand shitty gloves. Yeah,
we're not there yet, but we're getting. We moved on. Those things,
yeah.
Lacrosse gloves, like, you know, using blunts and lacrosse gloves. What were we thinking? Anyway, so I want to talk briefly, well, not briefly, maybe extensively, about your work in the Hema community as an artist. Now, this is one of my favourite shirts that I bought off you before I realised it was from you. It's
Thanks.
Got a quote from George R. R. Martin, "You are a sword, that is all." And I really like that. It's a line that Sergio Farrell says to Arya Stark. And what's cool about this that you drink is like the gear on this person is antiquated now.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
they got the shitty lacrosse gloves. They got a blunt, or is it a Feder? I can't tell. It might be.
And an FIE, like one of the FIE, like white masks, since like black is now ubiquitous in Hema for the most part. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, this was quite unusual. Like they weren't wearing all black at the time, and now people are wearing. They're probably going to go back to black, I guess, because like everyone's wearing colorful stuff again.
Right.
So you obviously have your own sort of line of stuff that you do on Redbubble and that, but you've also done lots of stuff for events. So tell us about, you know, what goes through your mind when, you know, you're given a brief. I know you're doing something for Moose Historical Fencing at the moment. What's your process?
What's my what?
Your process.
My process is excitement and way too many ideas and a thumbing through the internet, and then panic because I've waited several days to start it, and then I work on it a little bit, and then I run away from it for a few more days, and then I come back to it and work on it obsessively for probably 12 plus hours. But it's
an ADHD process, I guess.
Yeah, it's very much an ADHD manic process for me, but it's I'm primarily, I don't know if like anybody that knows like my illustrative style, it's like mainly influenced by a lot of European and French clairilignes style, so very fine, like almost like Tintin, very fine lines, and like not too much, like not too dense. Like there is detail, but there's like a contrast between like the negative space and then the detail of the figure or whatever. And I don't know, I like things to look worn and beat up and kind of yeah. And there's like, I guess, sort of a sometimes in one of my illustrations, there's kind of like a static quality to them. And I work primarily in Micron and brush and all that, you know, pencil and all that. I've done a little bit, like, speaking of antiquated, I still like primarily just do Photoshop. Like I don't even have like a Wacom tablet, Wacom, see, I don't even know. And you know, what's the one that everyone's doing now, like that you can like
Oh,
see,
create,
like
procreate, is it?
Procreate, yeah. I don't even have Procreate. But that's, yeah, that is like I find that the tactile, just like having my hands on it and like handling pencils, and like I end up with lead all over my fingers or ink, and that is the best way for me to like dive into something, as opposed to, you know, manipulating. And there's nothing wrong with that. Just for my brain and the way I function, I literally have to like touch it in order to make it. So,
So old school rather than digital art.
right, yeah. I mean,
Where's
I would like to do more digital art. It's just it's a matter of I think money, and I obviously already spend too much of my money on swords. So like the computer or Procreate's kind of an afterthought. So I'll get there in 10 years probably. Yeah.
So when someone like, say, Moose Historical Fencing asks you to come up with something, do they kind of like just let you run free with it, or do they give you a specific brief?
I kind of it was the opposite. I was just like, oh cool, there's this new club and we kind of already have a logo, and I just have a neat idea for something I want to draw. And then I was like, hey guys, look at this thing I'm drawing, maybe we could do t-shirts. And they're like, cool, sounds great. And so it's like this completely backwards process where it's sort of like I'll do something that I think somebody'll like, or like, and they'll be like, yeah, no, actually I like that, and we'll use that. And then sometimes, you know, someone will ask me for to do like a t-shirt for an event or a poster or something like that, and it's the same deal. It's very much like free rein. It's like they're very much more like there was like, can you do this illustration, I like your aesthetic, I trust you to do something unique, you can go right ahead, just show me like, you know, thumbnails and like sort of your process throughout. And you know, if I don't like it, or if it doesn't work or whatever, composition or otherwise, then we'll go back to it. But that's rarely happened. And Jeff Tsai with Iron Gate Exhibition in Boston was very much like, whatever you want to do is cool. And that's both very freeing and anxiety inducing, because then you're like, oh shit, then what if I do something that it's they're just like, I don't know. But luckily that hasn't happened for me yet. I don't know, eventually someday.
It's funny you should say that because Lisa Lacito just added in the comments section, don't forget the self-doubt phase.
Oh yeah, and we'll get to that, I'm sure. Yeah, it's absolutely.
I mean, what you're describing, like the way you kind of come up with stuff and do stuff, and like it's all last minute and panicking and stuff. It just makes me think of how Mozart worked, to be honest, because he didn't he write the overture for Don Giovanni the night before or something like that.
Yeah, that's my jam. That is totally like my deal. I'm just kind of like, yeah, I've been thinking about this for a while. Oh fuck, it's due tomorrow. So, and then, you know, can I say that? Is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine. I've been swearing the whole
Okay.
time.
Fucking great. Cool.
So, right, on a completely different tangent, the topic of, I'm just gonna address it head on. Antifa, as you pronounce it in the States, we say Antifa here on this side of the ocean, and
right.
fascism in the sword community. Now, I know this is something that plagues anything to do with history. It's not just HEMA. It rears its head in fascism. I'm talking about, not
yeah, yeah.
It rears its head in reenactment. It turns up in the pagan community, you know, sort of all the sort of sword adjacent communities.
Dork adjacent, nerd adjacent, yeah, generally, yeah.
Nerdy things, it pops up a lot, and it's often like the elephant in the room. And I, you know, as you know, this channel is about diversity, inclusion, and stuff like fascism. Is something that appears, and as a community, we have to deal with it. What are your thoughts on how we as a community actively keep fascism out?
Well, there are so many, but so I guess I want to start by saying fascism and Nazism and a lot of like sort of alt-right identitarianist thought primarily appeals to it crops up primarily because of the same reasons we get into HEMA in the first place, where it's like you have people who are like strange, like sort of like in a marginalized in some sense, maybe coping with mental health issues, and you know, I think the split really is like where fascism kind of comes in. It's like, well, here's this avenue for identity and community with the added bit of it's been stolen from you and or it's being perverted and you need to reclaim it. And it has this like sort of like you everyone feels epic with a sword. Right. And that's one of the major tenets of like fascism is it's like you are the hero of your own story and there are enemies everywhere. And, you know, issues of purity and whatnot. And that comes up in HEMA where, you know, you talk about like technique or like historicity and sort of like how I hate using this word, but like pure our HEMA is or like, you know, our practice academically and how accurate it is. And that can be a little wibbly for, you know, it can leave room for fascism. So with anti-fascists, like sort of activism or just awareness, it's primarily just like I love the historical part of it and sort of that it is rooted in reality and sort of like there are these techniques that exist and these glosses that exist and so on and so forth, but that for me it's the doing of the thing and the community. And I didn't get into HEMA because I suddenly was on this, like I read about like swords and like all that and suddenly was like, well, I need to like, I really need to go back and like find, you know, my heritage, you know? And that's like this kind of thinking, and there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but it's this sort of idea that like, there's this magical quality wherein you dive back and you feel like displaced in the modern world. And that's another thing that I think fascism takes advantage of is this feeling of displacement in modern times. Mm-hmm. And there's just this kind of like it's the action and the doing of the thing first in the community, and then the historicity, the culture, the heritage, whatever you want to call it, it's not necessarily like last, but it's like that's sort of the umbrella. You know what I mean? And then there's all these other nice things underneath and all these different people. And, you know, you and I both know as we do HEMA, it's like, wow, I didn't know that that was a weapon. I didn't know that was a technique. I didn't know that they used these at this time period. I didn't know. And a lot of people, like some things that we see is like people are like to say in like historical fantasy or European fantasy, it was like, well, there are no black people in like sword and sorcery or castle like dramas. And it was like, well, if you look at Mare or any like small sword, you know, codices or anything, it's like, there they are, you know, and there's all sorts and they're documented and they're in, both Baroque and Renaissance art. And so it's just for me, it's like this humility. I think whenever someone handles a sword or does what we do, it feels epic. And the difference is that there's not this, there's just this, like, you're doing this thing, you're holding your sword aloft or whatever, and then suddenly you feel as though you're a conduit for all your forebears or whatever, and then you move forward to kind of like eradicate sort of just like or move or like make it even more concentrated and homogeneous. And for me, it's just like the more stuff that's out there, the more I kind of want to try it all, you know. And so as that goes along, I find myself really humbled by that. So humility is like a really big part of, like, almost like a passive part of anti-fascist activism, is just sort of like recognizing that you kind of don't have anything over anybody. You know what I mean? You can be humbled at any time, with like in a tournament or in a class, even just in an academic discussion, you know. And it's where if you hold yourself above, or you fancy yourself an expert, and I know many people in HEMA still don't even like to use that word, or maestro or master, whatever. You know, if you fancy yourself an expert, then you can create those, as time goes on, you can create those divisions in yourself and, you know, others or with your group, you know. So the idea is to stay humble, stay communicative, and be open-minded. And then the active part of it is just having a very direct, clear policy in your club's bylaws to not allow sexism, racism, transphobia, homophobia, and so on, you know. And you know, it make that clear, you know, not just like buried in like some fine print, you know. Yeah. What I mean, make it,
and when people make mistakes, correct them. Kimberly, my friend who I did the last podcast with, says one of the favorite phrases that they use is, we don't do that here. It's like me, you, them, all of us, we don't do that here. So that someone knows where the line is. There is no time out. And the other thing is, like, HEMA is open source. It's hundreds of years old. It doesn't belong to anyone.
Yeah.
It belongs to everyone, you know. It's not, you know, it's not passed down through a line or anything. It's just there. We dug it out of the ground and we're sharing it out. Everyone has access to it. It doesn't belong to any particular people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And like with some of the sources, way back in the day, they might have been written explicitly for some sort of noble or merchant or whatever. But then time goes on and either they pass it to a friend, or there's like a larger printing of it, or it just gets kind of scurried away into someone's library, and then, you know, hundreds of years later gets discovered, and then suddenly everyone came out, and then you have people making facsimiles and translations and all that stuff. And it's open. It's everyone can kind of put their fingers in it and take from it and add to it, you know, if they have anything to add, you know. And it's this constant changing and evolving, sometimes argumentative, but ultimately, you know, positive thing, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we've witnessed a lot of changes in the last decade in the community itself, which is ironic, considering it's like an old art that we're studying, but it's still young and evolving from our perspective.
Well, we had a nice like 100-plus-year pause on any sort of historical fencing other than like Olympic foil, épée, and saber fencing. So, yeah.
Otherwise, they could say like Edgerton Castle and Co. had an early stab at it, but it didn't really continue. They had a really, really good go at it. But then we sort of picked up the baton, as it were. So I want to talk to you. Let's check the time. So yeah, I'll just talk to the folks. There's 15 of you watching at the moment. In about 5 minutes' time, or any time really, if you want to ask us something, please do go ahead. Probably the best way to do that is that little button at the bottom of your screen on your phone. It looks like a speech bubble with a question mark in it. Just hit that, type in your question for Graham, and we will answer them. I'm just going to quickly look. People have been saying stuff. Something Lisa added. Today in my SCA region, there's a Zoom class on manipulating in the Middle Ages. Racism, nationalism, ethnocentrism, and the SCA. So many of us are thinking about this. That's precisely what we were talking about just then.
Yeah. Very
on topic.
Yeah.
HEMA is for everyone, say Moose Historical Fencing. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
talking of fencing for everyone, the next thing I want to ask you about is common fencing, or vulgar fencing. Mm-hmm. That's just the master strikes or the master techniques. What, you know, you called your club that you founded as a facilitator the Common Fence, Philadelphia Common Fencers Guild. Now, what was the thinking behind that name? What was the tone you were trying to set there?
So it's a few things. And I didn't realize this until, I remember this until just now, but in the immediate, there was kind of this, because there had been this sort of this shifting from the old guard, and I know you've discussed this in other podcasts, but like elitism, and it's not as like stratified necessarily, but there is, it is present. And so, and there is just this kind of like, you know, poo-pooing and kind of like there's a right way and a wrong way, and my way is the right way. And the Common Fencers was sort of like, yeah, it's sloppy, and it's like, you know, we're just sort of like figuring it out as we go. And so it's kind of like having an organization like that was kind of a middle finger to sort of just this established, I don't know, like just, I guess, proper fencing. I don't know. And just the idea and emphasizing, the other part of it is emphasizing, like you had said, that HEMA is for everyone. Mm-hmm. And you can come to it with no background. You could be into like boffers or SCA or Eastern martial arts or stage fencing. You could literally have not done any physical activity at all in recent years. And the idea is, yeah, exactly. And so that was the crux of it. And again, it was like this sort of, I was not necessarily the instructor. And like you said, I was the facilitator. I had my knowledge that I'd kind of built up over a few years. And then it was kind of like very early on, I was like, anything, any experiences that you have that you want to bring to the fore, exercises, drills, warm-ups, people that you know, bring them in. We can all like pull something from it. And so I would have like guest instructors come down from other clubs in other states. I'd kind of have like students be like, you know, they'd say something that's like, I have a really good like drill or technique or like something like that. I'm just like, yeah, of course, please do that. And then Connor didn't mention this, but when we were doing practices in Clark Park in Philly, eventually every Sunday, this guy we ended up calling the Battle Rabbi come by and just watch us and walking his beagle. And as it turns out, he was a Roman centurion reenactor in Israel. I was just like, Rabbi, do you want to like come by someday, like, and just show us like your legion techniques? And so he brought a gladius and I forget the name of the shield, but he brought all that and he talked about,
Is it scutum?
I don't know. I dare not say, because I feel like one of my more historical savvy friends is just going to go, oh my God, you know? So the idea was, it's just like, Philly already kind of has this vibe of like, we're all in it together, you know, especially in Philly. It's like, just like I used to describe it, it's like that scene in the Titanic where we're all going down, everything's falling apart, and everyone in Philly and in our fencing club was like the string quartet on the deck. They're just like, yeah, we're just doing this right now. Everything is a hellscape, but we're just gonna play beautiful music. And yeah, and so that was primarily, long story long, that was what was behind the Common Fencers Guild, was just like, I felt personally like everyone had someone to bring. There was also imposter syndrome, so I never felt comfortable saying, it's like, I'm the instructor, and I know what I'm talking about all the time. And that was a way to kind of like take that pressure away from me. So yeah.
So you're, yeah, that was the thinking behind that. It's kind of leads me on to my next thing, which was about imposter syndrome and mental health. So in the little chat we had beforehand, if you don't mind me saying, as a friend, I think you're in a really good place right now in terms of your mental health. You seem to be firing on all cylinders. And I want to ask you, like, how important is HEMA to your contributing to your mental health?
It's massive. Because other than like illustration and like art in general, and maybe cycling, it's probably been the most consistent thing, activity in my life. Like I said, I'm going on 10 years now, almost. Yeah, like, so I started in 2012. Yeah, 10 years, and that's the longest uninterrupted span of me doing a thing, especially me being the spastic ADHD case that I am, I ever in my life. And it's huge. It's so important, and it's very important.
And on the topic of imposter syndrome, like, you kind of hinted on this with your art, like your approach to art, and like, oh my God, what if they hate it kind of thing. And like, I put in the phrase facilitator, so you saw yourself as a facilitator for the Common Fencers Guild, rather than it takes the, like you said, it takes the pressure off making myself the leader. What is, you know, I've spoken to a lot of people, like more than 100 people on this podcast, about being in charge of a group, and or being asked to come and fence as a guest instructor at an event, or even just entering a competition. And that thing, imposter syndrome, is the topic that comes up the most. So, you know, it's not something that you can just confidence away. You know, it is always there. Like, people, like lots of people often say to on forums and stuff, I want to do HEMA, there's no clubs near me, what do I do? And the response from the sort of more seasoned people in the comments is, start your own club. They're like, but I can't do that, I'm not good enough. And like, you've been doing this 10 years and you're like, well, I don't really know anything.
Yeah, I didn't graduate from like any school in this or anything. Like, there's not a certificate that I have or anything. And I think a lot of people, everyone struggles with that. It's just, you might have a background in like archaeology or romance languages or like, you know, whatever, but there's no BA in long sword fighting or small sword or anything like that, you know? And that contributes largely to like this feeling of kind of like, how, what is there even such a thing as a pedigree in this hobby, sport, activity? You know what I mean? Like, and no, there's
No, I mean,
not anymore.
we've got a kind of lineage now, but the lineage is alive. You know, it's who instructed who and who passed on to who. Like, I think Kaya was talking about it. It's so young, such a young sport. And everyone I've spoken to, they've all got different ways of coping with the dreaded imposter syndrome. Like, Kaya's method is, rather than seeing myself as just the leader of these people and like the guru who's here to teach them, and all the kind of self-absorbed icky feelings that comes with that.
Dangerous thinking, yeah.
Yeah, is I'm just a student who's been doing it longer than them. I'm like, I'm in the year above, I'm still a student, and I'm helping them, they're like first graders or whatever. So I'm just trying to, you know, help them out so that we can all learn together. I just happen to have been doing it a bit longer.
Like a tutor, almost, you know, I would say.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think it's important to validate and recognize your experience. Like, you've been doing this 10 years. When I met you, I think it was 2014. So you'd been
2013. Or no, it was 2014. Yeah.
You've been doing it 2 years then, and I was at IGX in Boston, and I think I'd known you online, and then like met you in person, and people were excited to see you, Fence, and you were all kind of like, oh no, kind of like, oh, I'm not that good and stuff like. But you obviously,
yeah, like now, for example.
you're blushing, but they were just like, you know, even then, like, people were kind of like, oh, this guy can fence, kind of thing. Let's watch him fence, kind of thing. So it's like, even in those 2 years, you pick stuff up, you know. So in the 8 years since then, you must have picked up some more. So there is stuff that you've picked up that you can pass on to other people.
Right.
It's, you know, I'm not trying to, this isn't a therapy session or anything, but I'm just trying to sort of say that we all struggle with imposter syndrome, especially if we find ourselves in charge. And like I was saying to Connor last time when I spoke to him, is like, he, like I, like you, we all ended up being in charge by accident. You know, we didn't aspire to be the leader. We just kind of ended up holding the baby, kind of thing. Like, well, I want a fence, so I better run. Because if I don't, the club's going to fall apart, or there is no club, so I just got to do it. Who's going to help me?
Kind of thing.
So I think, and the people who don't want to be in charge are the best at being in charge, it tends to be, because they don't want it. They don't want that responsibility. If you want it, you know, that's you know, people who want that power tend to get corrupted by it. So
that absence of megalomania definitely helps with the whole teaching thing, I think. Like,
definitely. Right, we got some questions. I was going to say answers, but we've got some questions in the question box. Mm-hmm. Cherry's joined us. Cherry the Sword Guy, what advice would you give to someone looking to start a fencing club / study group?
I'm trying to remember what my mindset was, what the hell I thought I was doing. Because I happened upon people who were just fucking around in Clark Park, and I was like, are you guys doing HEMA? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, cool. And so, and then I was like, I was just like, let's make this a thing. Like, let's just start a group. And then we get in touch with each other on Facebook and or Instagram. And we just like make that a thing. And it was like this progression of, it's like, okay, we're meeting now. It's like, what should we do? It's like, well, let's study kind of sort of mostly Meyer. And I'm not just studying Meyer because it's my namesake, just because it was, at the time, it was like what I was like reading and watching the most, on YouTube. So primarily it's to start a group, meet a bunch of like-minded enthusiasts, be enthusiastic, you know, be a fucking dork about it. And primarily if someone's, in my experience, if someone sees you, witnesses you doing something with enthusiasm, and we had a benefit of being in Clark Park, which is like, there were festivals, there were like flea markets, and there was just all sorts of people milling about, and they would just see us, and all of us were like having a good time and laughing, and then they would just see like a glint of steel and people whipping around steel swords, and we're like, are they swinging around swords? And then we would tell them that what we're doing was like legit martial art, and they'd be like, shut up, and be like, no, and come over next Sunday, and they would. and word spread. So be enthusiastic, be humble. Say just like, you know, I want to do this thing, but primarily I want to build a community. A club is a community, you know. And if you start it with that mindset, then I've found that things move a lot easier and a lot smoother, and you can enjoy it more, mm-hmm. you know. And that's crucial actually to conquering the imposter syndrome, because if you set out kind of, and I'm sure there are people who have done this and there's nothing wrong with it, but if you set up, it's like, I'm going to teach the noble art of fencing like my ancestors did, and if there's this like kind of lofty, then you're gonna be like, shit, I have to keep this up. And you know, whereas like if you're just like, I don't know, this is fur cow, I saw this and this is what I did, and yeah, here we go. And
that was. I would argue that even if it's just a bunch of pals in the park, mm-hmm. this is based on my experience over like watching clubs form and then run into trouble after a while. It happens to every single club. Have your rules from the start. Don't just wait until things go wrong, which then forces you to write rules. Have rules.
Right.
Beginning, it can be really simple, like don't be a dick, but have rules.
That's a crucial rule. Yeah,
you could just have one rule, don't be a dick.
So
just, you gotta have rules, even if it's just a few pals meeting on a Sunday in the park. Have them to keep everyone safe. You know, if it makes you feel like I'm being an authoritarian douchebag, just say this is for safety, you know.
Yeah.
Basically, all the rules in my school are for safety. And to, even in the case of, like, there's one rule which we don't talk about, Fight Club, that refers to written work. So if someone's doing some research, you don't share that without their express permission. So that's still, like,
yes.
safety in terms yeah. of their protecting their data. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's an important thing, I think. Let's see what the next question is. Moose, historical fencing. What are you most excited about in the future of HEMA? Oh.
First thing, I'm really excited for the price of Pro Gauntlet to go down as it becomes more ubiquitous. I want a pair. But in seriousness, So I guess I can talk about this by giving an example. Casey, the facilitator head of Moose here in Portland, he started up, and it was kind of from, like, I had a sparring call during the pandemic, and it was just like three or four of us. And then Casey came up from Pennsylvania and was just looking to smick people about with swords. And then he came across, I wasn't there that day, but I think it was Devin and Caitlin and Jamie. Hi guys. And he was like, you know, and that's kind of how it started. Very quickly, you know, we'd spar this tennis court, the biggest newspaper in the state, a photographer came by and was like, what are you guys doing? And took photos, and it was featured on the front page of the local and state section. And then very quickly, one of the major local news networks wanted to do like a thing on us. And what I'm most excited about is HEMA. Like, people are always groaning about HEMA becoming too mainstream or like sportified. But for me, I'm excited for HEMA to be an even more known, accepted outlet and community building thing. I'm excited to see more sources, like more, you know, research come into it. I'm excited to see people from different walks of life and different like martial backgrounds. I'm excited to see it mutate and become like, you know, cause you know, you and I probably as parents know people like do like after school karate or something like that. And it's good for the self-esteem and the like physicality. And I want to see, and I am seeing HEMA become that for people. And I love the idea of HEMA becoming like a more of a community thing, not just like in terms of education or youth stuff, but like I know Kimmy in Canada, and actually Dave Rawlings' group, their HEMA groups were in Pride, marching, and I think that's wonderful. And that's like, A, that's free advertising, and B, but more importantly, it's you're showing solidarity. You're showing that you're a presence in the community, and it's you're inviting people in to see what you're about. And I love the idea of like in a few years, like Moose being like a thing, like HEMA being a thing that people like know about Portland, and it could be the same for any town that you do it in. And it's like, well, yeah, there you can go fishing and swimming, and you can take a boat to like one of the islands, and also there's this fencing club, like something like that, like becoming part of the local pastiche, I guess. Yeah. So just having it, be like, back in the day when people would do gymnasium fencing, it was part of what, worked the humors and, brought us vigor and all that stuff. So,
I think a lot of, like, I think people forget sometimes that the majority of people who are learning how to fence did it for exactly the same reason we're doing it now. We're doing it for because it's fun. It's a fun recreational thing to do. Not, I have to learn this because I need to defend my life and my honor, or I have to learn this because I've got a duel next week. It's just, this is fun. Swords are cool. I like playing with swords and hitting my friends with swords. That's why they did it. And like, going to classes is fun, and practicing with your pals is fun, and it was a recreational thing. And it would be
And there
nice if
were nerds in the 19th century too. And they had handlebar mustaches or like big hair, but there were nerds back then too, like so.
Thierry responding to our first answer, like how to start a HEMA club, be a massive enthusiastic nerd, encourage non-dickishness, resist the urge to print posters of my face on for to create a cult of personality. I think I can do that.
And Terry has such a face and such an epic beard that
And
it's like the beacon of Gondor. You can see it from afar.
The enthusiasm is really important. It makes me think of I've got the book here. Zbigniew Tchaikovsky, Understanding Fencing, is a really cool modern fencing book, but worth reading if you're wanting to become an instructor or find yourself in a position awkwardly where you have to teach people and you didn't really expect to get there. But the first thing he says is exactly what you said, Graham, which is your first job is to be passionate. It's not difficult because the moment you put a sword in someone's hand, their eyes light up, and they're suddenly a child again, and it's just awakened something from their childhood, probably. Just that excitement about suddenly I don't mind doing physical movement because swords are cool, and this is
It's like I don't mind sweating so long as I can pretend I'm Aragorn or whatever, and for me, it's like one of the first things I would do. I actually, this is really crucial for me, at least when I was running the Common Fencers, and like even when we're practicing in the park, is, and even in like our official practices at Moose, is like anyone that's new or just watching or walking by and they stop, and if I see them and like people are kind of doing their anything, it's like, do you want to hold this? And usually it's kids, and I love it when with the kids, like 5 and 6 year olds, they're like, oh, like, and their parents are like, is this okay? And it's like, oh, fuck yeah, it's okay. It's like, I wish somebody in the park let me hold their real steel sword. That would have been awesome. And like, and the same with like, 20 something coming in. It's like, wait a minute, is that real? And like, you hand it to them, and they're like, and then one of the first things they say is like, it's so light. And it's like, I know. And it's not that hard to use. And that's how you hook them in, and they join your cult. So.
They don't even have to be that young. Like, my mum came around earlier. I don't know if you saw the picture of my story, but she popped by. We had some lunch, and on my sword rack here, someone a while back gave me an ornamental Toledo souvenir of like a
Yeah.
one-handed and it's just a wall hanger, and I've just had it sat there in my sword rack for ages, and my mum's like, "That's pretty," and I was like, "Oh yeah, it's just for show." And she's like, "It's really nice." And I said, "You can have it," and then there's like I gave it to her, and she was just lit up, like she's just holding this thing. She was so lit up, you know. My mum's in her 70s, and she's just like, you know, just like those little kids in the park. She's really
awesome.
Sword now, so she took that home. She's probably just going to hang it on her wall, but she's got her own sword, and she was really pleased with that. And even though she's like seen me do this hobby for all this time, she was still really, really pleased to get to do that.
So
we've got another question. Let me just see. Oh, some more comments here. Lisa says, Philly Club is on the promotional logo for the park they practice at. Now, next, Maine. Moose Historical Fencing, whoop, whoop. JD Kutzer, when we were in the park, the kids stopping and watching absolutely got to me. It's like looking in a time mirror. I love that. You just see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's huge. I remember actually, so like I've been into like medieval swordy dorky things since I was probably 5 or 6. But I remember, speaking of Toledo wall hanger, like tourist swords, my uncle in New Jersey, because I was born in New Jersey, he was a wine salesman, but he had this little rotating thing of like brass and steel rapiers that were toothpicked.
I know,
like, yeah. And they were so we would come down for the holidays like every year, and I remember it was like, can I look at the sword toothpicks again? And I would take some of them, and I have like my action figures, and I'd be like, here, you get to hold a real sword, and like and that was like, and I didn't know anything about it, and the fact for me, the fact that like my adult uncle was like, yeah, I've been to Spain, I want this cool little sword thing, and it's just like, you know, so yeah, that it's like it touches when you can be in that position to kind of facilitate that wonder and be like, yes, it's real, you know. And that happens so rarely in our lives, where it's like, you know, like in like Santa Claus or whatever, like maybe that's a silly example, but like just kind of, there are so few things in our lives that as we get older that like end up bearing out to be true. And so when someone's like, wait, I can be a knight kind of, and I'm like, yeah, kind of. And they're like, and that's great. That feels awesome. Honestly.
That happened to me last summer. I was practicing with those pole axes. You can see behind me there. I had a bunch of these in the park because I had a workshop that I was going to do at Swordpunk up in the Midlands here in the UK. And I thought I'd just use my friends who I practice with on a Saturday as guinea pigs for my class. So I was getting them to practice with the pole axes. And then someone came cycling up and threw their bike down and went, are you doing HEMA? And I'm like, yes, pick up a pole axe, let's go. And they just go, Cassie, and she's one of my students. And she's just passed her first like grading, and we're really
nice.
So it was really nice. It was lovely to sort of see that moment of, oh wow, you're doing Hebrew, you're like right in my town, and wow, I didn't ever expect to find it here. So it's just lovely when you like you get those moments, you see that light come on in someone's eyes, and it's just magical. Another question, Lynn the Wicked. Do you think it is possible to be a casual HEMA club member? I don't really know what that means. As in,
I think I have an idea. I know Lynn. She's a friend of mine, actually. She and her boyfriend. Hi, Jake. So I think I know what she's talking about. And I think you and I have kind of discussed this sort of bracingly, like a little bit. But like, I think with HEMA, with any martial art, because of like especially Eastern martial arts being a living tradition, and there being like grades and belts, and sort of like there sometimes it's like a family thing that's passed down. But I think when people come to HEMA and they realize it's real, and there's all this stuff behind this research, suddenly there's like there can be this initial excitement, and then there can be like, oh, I can't do this unless I'm like full tilt, absolutely serious, dedicated. And that's not true. And you had talked about like, people not having clubs in their area and stuff and starting their own. And it's like sometimes a club can be like your club in your area can be like kind of a drive. And it's maybe sometimes the only time that you can come down is like every other weekend, and maybe only once a month, But the important thing is that you're doing it. You're doing the thing, for me anyways. It's like, and what is your goal with HEMA? Some people it's doing research and practicing the techniques that they read about, and seeing if they can achieve them successfully. Some people it's tournaments. Some people it's just smicking their friends about in the park. It's like it's really whatever you want it to be, So, Lynn, come to practice sometime, okay?
You don't have to, you don't have to follow a specific escalator of career path.
Oh.
I think I personally, I think I've come full circle, and that all I want to do is smack people with swords in a park now. That's all I want to
Yeah.
do.
Yeah.
I've kind of like done all I like, the tournaments, the organizing, the club organization. Now I just want to smack people with swords. That's what it's all
You're
about.
sitting on the sidelines going like, they look like they're having fun. I miss that,
That I want
Yeah.
that. Comment here from Emmy TJE. Here in my country, I don't know where that is, there is a law that enables us to give a weapon directly to someone else's kids in a public space. So we hold the top from the sword when we give it to kids. Oh, I think just as sort of from a safety point of view, if you're giving swords to kids, that can be a bit dangerous. I had an incident actually where I was asked to come to an event in my town. They said, "Oh, you can do a demonstration of sword play." And we're like, "Okay." So, we offered some lessons of stuff as well. It was a bit like a big music festival, and we were plonked right in the middle of this music festival teaching HEMA. It was really weird, and people were like with their picnic blankets right up close to where we were doing sword fighting stuff. We had to keep asking them to move away. People
Yeah.
just had no idea about safety. But anyway, talking about that topic of safety, we had a table with a load of weapons on it, and like so people could come up and like pick up the sword, look at the sword kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I remember one time this chap was I know this is going to be a podcast, so people won't see what I'm doing, but I'm standing up.
Right.
So this chap was bent over like this, and he had his little child with him. And the child was looking at the swords, and he's going, "Oh, what do you think of that, Timmy?" And Timmy picks up this dagger, and then he stands up like this, and Dad's face is right over like that. And it's what you call in health and safety reports a near miss.
Yeah.
So Dad's eyeball was just out of the way. I think Dad had specs on, but I was just like,
Almost lobotomized dad. Yeah.
yes, a little Timmy nearly blinded Dad, and I was like, "Oh, right, like we'll just have a kind of let's not touch the swords."
Right.
If
Yeah.
you want to touch
Yeah.
them, maybe ask them
Right.
to sort of do it with you, kind of thing. But
Yeah.
yeah, that can be a real thing. It wasn't the kid's fault. It was definitely the dad's fault for putting
Oh,
his.
yeah. And with the person that asked the question, the first thing I went to is like handing a kid a sword and it's legal in my country is like, are they Sikh? Because like everyone has a sword in that community and it's awesome. But yeah, it's the same deal too. Like I mean, primarily if it's just one kid and they're with like right next to their parents and they're both standing up where we haven't done any like festivals yet. And I was like, you can hold a long sword. And I explicitly was like, don't smack your dad in the shins or anything like that. If it's two kids, I'll give them like the Rawlingses and or whatever, and they can swing them around. And it's just like, or one of them, I'll hit one and to them, and they'll hand it to the other. And I was like, you can like play with this and stuff, but don't swing it at your brother or whatever or your sister, because it's not fair to attack someone who doesn't have also have a sword, but also for liability reasons, please don't attack each other with our swords. So, yeah.
Yeah,
So.
I just say just keep the points pointed at the ground.
Yes. Yeah.
in a good old kind of reenactment way of fighting, keep your points down.
Right.
Emmy says, I forgot to add the question, are there laws that make it harder to do it in your country? Well, you go first, because there's different laws in your country. I don't know what it's like.
We had a cop come to a practice up in Maine. I wasn't here for this, but they came to practice once, and everyone was like, kind of like, oh shit, like, did someone call? And they were just like, they were just asking, it's like, what is that? And like, what are you doing? And it's like, and they just asked questions, and there wasn't any sort of like, be careful, or, you know, like, you know, they didn't come with gun drawn or anything like that. That hasn't come up yet. I would assume as time goes on, as maybe we do demos, you know, maybe we have a table, you know, there will be logistics around that, but there's no explicit laws around, like, if we had a sharp and we were, like, say, practicing tatami cutting in the park and didn't tell the authorities, then that would be a point of concern, I think. And we'd probably have to go through the proper channels. But as far as explicit laws around that, none that I know of, really.
From my perspective, Thierry probably knows more about this than me, because people who import and export swords a lot, especially the antique swords, have to really keep on top of this stuff, because it's weird and it changes a lot, and you don't know it's changed and you have to keep checking it. But I think a lot of the laws here in the UK are all about intent. So, like, if you are going from one place to another, you have to have a reason for having swords on you. Like, I've got swords in my car because I'm a sword instructor and I'm going to a fencing class, and this is equipment for my students.
Right.
So you just have to have a reason for whatever it is you've got on you. Like, and they're like, usually like, oh, yeah, that's fine.
It's not like that someone from the metro is coming up to you and it's like, yeah, miss, why is there a sword in your car? And it's like, oh, I have a vendetta.
I need to arm a small militia. Right. Thierry says that Timmy is a problem child. Naughty Timmy. Kimmy says sharps are a very different story. Yep. Yes, indeed. We've come to the hour. Our time is up. That just leaves me to say, Graham, thank you so much for talking to us. And I look forward to seeing more of your art and buying more of your stuff. And when you finish the Moose logo, I want one of those shirts.
Thanks, friend.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To show your appreciation, please give us a 5-star review on your podcast platform, or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/swordwomen. Go to @swordwomen on Instagram to see upcoming interviews, or visit buythesword.net to learn about our events, or visit our Facebook page, By the Sword.